Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
135.
All right. And we are on chapter 18, text number 58.
Whoa. I'm so nervous.
Why?
Oh, my God.
Tell us your emotions.
I know if I start, I might cry. Like, I'm just so grateful. I feel like it's such an honor to be doing this and to have almost finished. We're almost there finishing the Bhagavad Gita. I don't know.
I'm in the same boat. It's such an honor and privilege to have been on this journey together. And I feel a mix of emotions. I don't want this to end. I mean, I'm sure it won't really end, but this little chapter will, you know.
3 years of our lives.
Yeah.
Three years. I feel fine. Okay.
Thanks. No, I'm joking. It is really cool. I'm very happy to be doing this with you two ladies and Abhijit, our producer, and Ella, our social media director.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We've just been a weird little family.
We a weird little family.
The greatest kind. I love how you were like, I'm fine. And Abhijit puts a thumbs up like, yeah, me too.
Totally like Pri and I, the feminine communicators and versus the masculine.
We're like avoidant. We're like, okay, cool. It's over.
I don't care.
It's going to be over, bro. Like, whatever. Everything comes to an end. Ha ha ha.
We're like, Pri, you're glistening eyed.
I know, literally. Anyways, let's do this quick recap of last episode.
So last episode we talked about embracing imperfection while staying true to our purpose. So Krishna talked about a lot of different things, but spiritual growth is about humility, steady action, and surrender. And when we offer it all to Krishna, our peace naturally follows, like our inner peace naturally follows.
So
that's pretty cool.
Super.
Wow. Well, while you guys are in this emotional what is the word? Help me
state.
Out.
Mood?
State or mood. I think this is a great time to, if you enjoyed our podcast and you want to donate.
What?
If you want to donate $108, we'll give you a gift of a Modern Yogi hat or toque.
Or what?
Toque?
Toque. Oh, sorry. Toque is the Canadian version. A toque is a Canadian version of a beanie.
Oh,
have you never heard that word before?
Never.
No.
Oh my God. So a beanie in Canada is called a toque.
Huh. I've never in my life heard that.
That will be the new name. Okay.
All right.
Cool.
So if you want a toque, donate $108. She just wanted to zap us out of our emotional state.
That's what she wanted to do. And it might have worked.
Yeah. So. Anyways. Wait. Hold on. Let's get us back there. I love you guys.
No. But to be fair, we only have a few, so limited edition. We're not going to make more of those. If we ever make something else.
Yeah, I think we have like five hats, like baseball hats and five toques left.
So, you know.
And all of this money that you donate goes towards maintaining this podcast, equipment, platforms that we have it on, all of that.
Marketing, everything.
Yeah, not one penny has been left unused. I'm pretty sure our account is negative at the moment.
Yeah, our account is pretty negative. And so if you can help us
our
out,
hearts
that would
are
be great.
In the positives, moolah in the negatives.
But you know, I mean, we're doing good and we are always grateful for anyone who wants to contribute. No pressure. I'm like that kind of person. I'm like, no, please don't worry about it. We're going to be fine. And then Sham was like, no. You want a hat? Just give us $108.
No, but even if you don't have the moolah around, just keep listening to our podcast or here's something you could do for free. Just tell three people about this podcast. Just tell somebody if you've enjoyed this podcast and you're with us until chapter 18, just tell three people and send the link to them so that they can start listening. And that would be the greatest joy of our lives. If you just tell somebody so that they can fall in love with Krishna and Krishna's words.
And you know, we've heard like there's been different people who have created little mini book clubs, like this one woman who got her husband to start it and they would read it together every week. You can start your own little mini book club with us and follow along and get together and read the texts with us and then talk to your friends about it.
Yeah. Totally.
There's a couple of people that in our DMs and our on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
At Modern Yogi Podcast.
At Modern Yogi Podcast.
Yeah, so there's a couple people that are like, hey, what book are you using? And then, so it is on Amazon. You just type in Bhagavad Gita as it is, and you can get a soft cover or a hard cover, but that's the book that we're using. And if you want me to send you a link, I've sent a lot of links in our DM, so just shoot me a message and I'll send you over the exact Amazon link.
It's also for free, vedabase.io.
Vedabase.io.
Yeah, if you want to check it out. Or you can just look up Bhagavad Gita as podcast it is online. I'm sure it will redirect you on Google to something like that.
Yes.
But yeah, so you, if you don't want to buy it just yet, you want to start reading along with us, you can read online. But yeah, let us know. We can also just send you that link. Yeah. You can let us know in the DMs.
Cool. All right. Invocation, please, ladies.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances onto them.
Shamali, don't look at me like that. I'm going to cry.
Oh my God, that invocation got me a little teary-eyed. Oh my God.
I just feel I had a montage of the hundreds of times we've done it, dude, and God, it just really got me. And it made me think this is what bhakti is all about, being so in the present, because I was really aware of the finite amount of times more that we'll do it. So
what did you guys do in that last invocation?
My heart, I'm telling you, this is a special episode. We're not quite at the end, but it does feel so monumental that we've made it this far.
We need to keep going because I'm going to cry.
You're gonna get your period soon. I'm gonna get my period soon. Are you gonna get your period soon?
I don't even know.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
I mean that might have something to do with it, but also Krishna too.
I think it's Krishna.
I don't think we've ever said that before on air.
I know.
All right. We're letting loose, ladies.
It's part of life. Okay,
it's part of life. Yeah. You know,
it just made me think of like when you're saying your final goodbyes to, let's say, a parent who's old and about to leave this world.
Oh my God!
So, wow.
Wow. Okay, I was.
That was deep and dark.
No, so I was thinking like this has been like our baby who's about to leave to college, let's say.
Better. And less dark.
And like that invocation prayer felt like one of the final like embraces we'll be doing. So I was really like, so many times, how many times when we chant or do stuff, our mind's somewhere else. But this time it was really here because it just felt like we don't know how many more times we'll be doing
this. You guys said it in like this slow, beautiful way that I was tearing up and I had my eyes closed and I was tearing up. It was crazy.
Yeah, I can't even talk right now.
What is
y'all are nuts.
You read the translation?
What?
Did you read the translation?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, nice. I didn't even know. Priya's crying.
I'm okay. Everything's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Okay. Well, text 58.
Okay. Priya Darshini.
Who is speaking? Let's clarify that real quick. Okay. Krishna is saying, if you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost.
Mm. Ooh, one more time.
If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost.
Oof, this is such a beautiful, because it's true, right? If you are like God conscious, right? You think of Krishna, things in life become easier because you know in the back of your mind, he's got your back, right?
Yeah.
And the moment like you take yourself away from that faith or like you like have doubts or you have like, if you're not God conscious of anything in particular or any God in particular, there is this notion of feeling lost. And I think billions and billions of people are feeling that right now in Kali Yuga.
Totally.
Actually, to line up with what you're saying, I think the biggest feeling most people are having in the world is a lot of anxiety.
Yep.
And the first part of the purport says a person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence, right? So life is a bit less full of anxiety and stress and all the things.
Yep. Right.
But,
That the next sentence I highlighted, the foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety.
Mm. Yeah.
It's literally like, it's like what I say all the time. It's like you wake up in the morning, you choose fear or faith. Fear will bring you anxiety. Faith will bring you peace.
Right.
That's
so true.
This verse is already acknowledging that life itself is like a maze full of obstacles. No matter where you are, who you are, that is the nature of life itself.
Yeah.
So how do we get through these obstacles? Mm. And the next line after what you read, Shama, they all go building one after the other. And then Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna becomes the most intimate friend. He always looks after his friend's comfort and he gives himself to his friend who is so devoutly engaged.
Mm.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I love that Prabhupada also makes a commentary to kind of the reality of what's happening in society and life, which is, he says, no conditioned soul actually knows what is to be done and what is not to be done. Like most of us are lost, right?
Totally.
But a person who acts in Krishna consciousness is free to act because everything is prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master.
That's a very special line. What does that make you feel or think of?
I just think that if you can make your life Krishna conscious to the best of your ability, you can feel safe in your actions, right? Mm. If the choices that you're making, you're considering sort of what would Krishna do or what would my spiritual master say about this action or this or the other. If you can really be honest with yourself in those moments and make those kinds of decisions, then Krishna is saying, I got you. You don't have to worry about fully knowing what's right or wrong, because if you are following in my principles and you are listening to me in your heart, then you are making the right choice.
Yep. And that's such a sweet feeling that we've said before, like, man, how nice it is to have Krishna right next to you, like Arjuna does on the battlefield. But even if we don't, Krishna is talking to us in our hearts. We just have to know how to listen.
Yeah. I also, when I was reading this, I woke up now. I was just feeling all the emotions, but I'm trying to be. I noticed myself being really mellow and quiet, but I want to, you know, give the energy that this deserves. I was thinking about this, this last line, and it's talking about like confirmed by the spiritual master, right? Like your choices are prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master. And I've always I've heard stories of devotees who will ask their spiritual master everything. Like everything. Like, should I marry this person? Should I have a child? Should I, like, everything, right? Yeah. Which, and now looking at this text, I'm like, oh, I kind of get it. They're just like looking for like the right choice.
Right.
Back then I would think like, oh, but you know, spiritual master, they're just there for spiritual guidance. Like, why are we asking these things? But I can see this, the both, right? Like the understanding that if one wants to live a life in Krishna consciousness, then if we ask your spiritual master for guidance, then you're making choices that, oh, should I marry this person because I do want to live a Krishna conscious life? Or should I have a child or not have a child because maybe I want to devote myself to preaching and then that might be counterproductive? Or should I raise a child, which is the greatest service someone can do? Or like these decisions that are, you know, depending on how you perceive it, like it is actually very lovely to have that kind of guidance from a spiritual master,
right,
if it's possible. And if not a spiritual master, then maybe the word is
like
blanking.
A senior devotee, mentor.
Exactly. Yeah. So not like which one's Shiksha? Shiksha. Shiksha guru.
Can you quickly explain to listeners what's
enough?
The
bless
difference?
You.
Bless you.
Shiksha guru. God bless you.
yeah, I'm just trying to make sure I get it right because the names,
you know,
are
honestly
buttering.
I always flip flop. There's Diksha and Shiksha. I think Diksha is your main one.
Yes. So Diksha Guru is the one that you are receiving instruction from, the spiritual master who you make the vows to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the person who you mostly go to. But your Shiksha Guru can be your parents. It could be another, for example, it could be my husband's guru, right?
Yeah.
Or it could be my parents' gurus. It's someone who also advises you, but it's maybe not your chosen guru, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you can have many Shiksha gurus because guru is one.
Yeah. Yeah. Diksha guru is one. Shiksha can be many.
Yeah. Diksha is like literally means initiation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Shiksha can be anybody who gives you spiritual guidance, teachings, and helps you understand scripture and practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I think when it comes to these life decisions, it is always lovely to have a Shiksha guru if you don't have direct access to your Diksha guru. Yeah. I know they sound so similar, so sometimes it can be hard to remember, but they also call it Diksha initiation. That's what helps me remember it. So yeah, that's what I was thinking about when it comes to like the spiritual master.
I think like the importance of Shiksha gurus, like mentors, people who are senior than you is so important. I would not be here today if I didn't have a strong mentor who just rescued me every time I fell off the path. You know what I mean? I literally would not be in Krishna consciousness without this person. And so I think it's really important to like get guidance, like ask people for help. And I think it's so hard to do that sometimes, but you could just ask for guidance like once in a while, like have a meeting with them, like once a quarter, once a month, like whatever works for you. Because I think that it's just so important to have someone hold you accountable, but also you constantly learning is so important in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. And someone on the outside that can really connect this philosophy to your life. is it's not supposed to be disconnected. It's supposed to be how in the practical matters of our day to day, we go applying this philosophy, you know? So someone on the outside, your parents, a mentor, whoever, you can present to them the realities of what you're living and you brainstorm. It helps to have a sounding board, which is also what's so nice about this podcast, have a sounding board to read it. Cause I'm reading it with you guys as I've never read it before. I'll gloss over things alone that when I read it out loud, I'm like, wait, I have no idea what I just read. Right. You know? So when you have someone to sound things off of, then you can really, the connections become more obvious.
Totally. Yeah. Actually, Shama, your mentor did an activity at the retreat I went to some time ago that I really liked, and that was really insightful. And that goes to show how much a mentor can bring into your life. And the activity was that we had to write down, I'm going to butcher it a little bit.
Just make it up.
But
paraphrase.
I was there. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing a little, like the you know, whatever. But basically we had a worksheet and the first question I think it asked was, who are the top five people that you've spent the most amount of time with in the last, I think it was 2 weeks or to a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. Let's say a month. Okay. And so I had to write that down. And so then the next step was, would you consider them peers? Would you consider them like junior to you, peers to you, or senior to you?
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so then, and we're obviously talking about Krishna consciousness, spirituality, right?
I see where this is going.
What?
No, I see where this is going.
You do? Okay.
Like you think she thinks of us senior.
I don't think you guys were.
I literally thought that she thinks of us as senior.
That's so funny. You guys were not on the list.
That was good. That was
for
good.
Some reason.
That was good. That was good.
Ouch.
No, we were not I on hadn't. The list. No, it, I hadn't
you
seen you that
beneath
month.
Me.
No.
Okay, continue.
I hadn't seen you in that month. So you weren't on that list. And okay. You know, funny enough, you know who was on the list?
Who?
Nina.
My partner Nina?
Your partner Nina.
She what are you guys doing together?
I don't know. I don't know what that was, but I had somehow spent some time with her, you know, in a month before that. And so she was on the list. My husband was on the list and a couple of other people were on the list. And so then I had to label, you know, do I think that they're... And then the next question was, do you feel like you get Krishna consciousness from them? Or that you give Krishna consciousness.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I'm going to stick to the Nina example because I think this is lovely. I feel like without her meaning to, we actually do end up talking about Krishna.
Wait, just for context, my partner Nina is not a devotee. She's right. Not a Krishna conscious person.
But she knows a lot about Krishna.
I want to say that in quotes, not a devotee.
I know.
Like, come on.
Yeah. She knows a lot about Krishna consciousness and, you know... yeah, I don't know. We couldn't explain Nina to you in a minute. There's just too much to share, but she's wonderful.
She's a complex soul. But I think she's done a lot in her past life, spiritual stuff in her past life, to be surrounded by Christian conscious devotees her entire her entire existence now.
Even like co-workers and other, throughout her life. So it's really interesting. Yeah, no, anyway, so Nina was there. Obviously, she was my junior in terms of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not a this or anything. And then I felt like I actually gained Krishna consciousness from being around her because she knows I am a devotee. And so she would make jokes about Krishna. And then that would lead to us talking about Krishna, even if it's in a small way. Yeah. And I just thought that was so interesting. Obviously the Nina part is funny, but in general, what I learned from the exercise is that I'm actually not spending enough time with people that I perceive to be seniors and how I can, the times in which I do spend time with people who are senior to me, I feel so full.
Yeah.
Like I feel so inspired because I see like how they live and how they imbibe Krishna consciousness and it like reignites any, it doesn't have to be, again, it doesn't have to be like someone who's your mentor precisely, but someone who you look up to, who's doing really nicely in Krishna consciousness, just spending quality time with them, whether it's like, whatever activity it is, right? And so I thought that was so lovely because I haven't had anyone present that thought process of who are you associating with? Mm-hmm. How much Krishna consciousness are you exchanging? Like, what is the takes, you know, give or take of that? Right. Like, it was just a very insightful activity.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what mentors bring into your life. So
I think that's great, Priya, that you're bringing that up because if you're listening, you just gave everyone, every listener out there, which is like people all around the world, a little interactive activity to do. They should do it. Like, totally. If you're listening to this now, you should do what Priya just described. And if you forgot it, rewind and listen to that part.
Just so that they know, it's like, take account of the top five people that you've been spending your most time with in the past month.
Yeah, in the past month, right? So it has to be finite so that you can kind of see what
make
it
the
is.
List. Yeah. Step two.
And in terms of a spiritual knowledge situation,
yeah.
Are they beneath you or do they know less?
Peers, juniors, or seniors?
Let's not use Thomas terms.
Are they the scum beneath your
feet? Oh my goodness.
I'm joking.
Of human society. Sorry, say it again. Peers.
Are they peers, juniors, or seniors?
Okay. That's good. That's very good.
That's the PC way to say it.
Yes. And, you know, this reminds me how Prabhupada says, something, I'm paraphrasing, but tell me who you surround yourself with and I will tell you who you are.
Yeah. But also the important part is not just how you perceive them, but what actually do you gain from that interaction? And not to say that everything has to be like you gain from someone, but just like, what is the natural flow of that conversation? Are you receiving Krishna? Are you giving Krishna? Mm-hmm. What does that look like? And then just balance it out, right? Mm-hmm. If you feel like you have too many seniors and you're not interacting with enough peers, that's also something to think about. Mm-hmm. Because having conversations with people your own age can bring a different perspective and can bring a different type of mood for your Krishna consciousness. So it's just like the balance of it all, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a good loophole here is like people who are less Krishna conscious than, what is the peers?
Juniors, right?
If you want to give them Krishna conscious, you can tell them about our podcast. And also, if you want to learn and you don't have any mentors around you, you can also do this virtually, right? So like spending time on Zoom with people that have more spiritual knowledge than you, or learning from seniors through YouTube or whatever it is.
Retreats. Oh, yeah. There's so many ways to get connected. If you're looking for something, let us know. We have ways to connect you. There's youth retreats. There's women retreats. There's like online sanghas. Yeah. A lot of online things that you can partake in. So yeah.
It's so interesting what someone else's knowledge provokes within you, because I can think of like, many situations where while it might feel nice to like be the one imparting a lot of knowledge on others, it makes you feel good. Wow, yeah, I know so much. I can help someone out. It is so important to also be able to look up to someone and be in that position where you're being inspired by someone. And this can seep into all aspects of life, even choosing partnership. Like, how do you want to align your life? Like, as long as I think the person supports your dreams, that's great. But you can be honest with yourself. Then personally, I have been in relationships in the past where it was very nice because the person seemed very open to learning and growing and hearing about Krishna consciousness. But it got to a point where I thought, I want to be like inspired as far as Krishna consciousness goes
to receive as well.
I want to receive. I don't want to be the one carrying the torchlight. That's a lot of pressure. Like this is the way forward Krishna consciousness wise. Like I was very inspired by them morally as a person, blah, blah, blah. But it's nice then to also receive Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not just that, not just for the inspiration, but also for someone to help you be accountable.
Yeah,
I think that's a really tough one. Sometimes we don't want to be held accountable. But it's important too, right? Because inspiration is it all. There's duty involved.
Yeah. And it's important though. I think Krishna is talking about, like, if we don't work in consciousness of Krishna and not hearing about Krishna, we will be lost. And I think everyone in this room, and I think everyone who's listening, has felt that feeling of being lost.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that that's why this activity is so important, so we can hear more about Krishna from people who know more,
right?
And so that we can feel less lost, because literally he's saying Krishna is saying the things that we have all felt.
I mean, talking about being lost, Prabhupada words it in a very interesting way, that when we're not connected to this knowledge, to Krishna consciousness, we might lose ourselves in the, he calls it, material whirlpool. And I thought that's an interesting way, like if you've ever been in a whirlpool, they're so tumultuous. It's like he calls it the ocean of birth and death. That we've heard before, but I liked the visual of a material whirlpool.
We get sucked in.
Yeah. We want to break free from all these material perplexities. Get out of the whirlpool.
All right. Chapter 18, text number 59.
Shamsangita.
Krishna says, if you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed by your energy. You will have to be engaged in warfare.
Oh, he's talking directly to Arjuna in that one.
Yeah.
He's like, sir,
Yeah. If you do not act according to my direction, you do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare.
Right. That's so interesting because Arjuna, Prabhupada explains further, he was a military man. His nature is a Kshatriya. So his natural duty was to fight. But interestingly enough, it's because of his false ego that he was fearing all the repercussions of killing his teachers, his grandfather, his friends, and he was worried that he would incur all those sinful reactions.
Right. I have a question.
Oh my God, we both have questions.
I think we might have the same question, but go for it.
I don't think so, but okay. But what did you eat for breakfast?
I was literally just thinking, what did you eat for breakfast would be your question. I swear to God, those words rung in my ear, and I thought, I'm not going to say it right now.
We're telepathetic. We're telepathetic.
I know what you mean. Anyways.
Okay, so you know how like Arjuna's nature was a soldier.
Right.
What is our nature in 2025 as these lost souls?
Well, each person has their own nature.
Mm-hmm. We broke this down overall a lot, nature, right? Like overall nature is to find our way back to Krishna.
That's our purpose.
Okay.
But like nature, you have your nature and I have mine and we're very different, unique individual souls.
But overall, we're trying to go back.
But that's not our nature. That's our eternal constitutional position as parts and parcels of Krishna. Our goal is to get back, but our natures are different.
What are you trying to say though?
Yeah, what are you saying, Shama?
It's like what's our nature? Because like we don't have like Kshatriyas and whatever, right?
But we read kind that last time, right? Do.
Okay.
Well, you have natural.
I wasn't listening to the last episode.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. But remember that even though it might not be these ancient battlefields like previous ages, you still have natural, your nature. Like, and Priya read the modern day version of what those natures
would be.
Like, Brahmanas are more like the teachers.
You might not be a Brahmana.
You might not be a soldier, but you have certain tendencies that lead you to certain natures. You have certain nature that leads you to certain paths.
So we have to be engaged in action in those natures. We just gotta do our job, basically.
Yeah.
See, was that the same question you had?
No.
Exactly. It wasn't. Priya, what is your question?
Go ahead.
This is so funny. Okay, my question. It says, so Krishna, I'm gonna reiterate the thing that Krishna said in the text. If Arjuna doesn't act according to Krishna's direction and doesn't fight.
Right.
Then he will be falsely directed.
Mm.
So he's saying that if Arjuna chose not to fight, that choice of not fighting would be guided by like material nature, not by his like actual purpose. Mm. I'm trying to just clarify that.
It would be guided by his false ego.
And Prabhupada explains a little more, and maybe this will help answer. Prabhupada says, it's because Arjuna was considering himself, his own self, the master of his actions, as if he were the one directing the good and bad results of such work. Because Arjuna was worried about the bad results. Right. So instead of thinking, I just got to do my duty regardless of the results, he was worried about the bad results. And he forgot that actually Krishna was present there instructing him to fight.
Yeah, but that's so tough.
That is so freaking tough.
If you break it down to what he's saying there, he's saying, Arjuna thought, I don't want to see my relatives dead, so I should go to the forest. And Krishna's like, no, but you don't get it. They're already dead. And I already know that. So do it anyways. That's like a tough message, you know?
Well, you know what that connects to? Remember in the previous episode, we talked about how Krishna was saying, the grass isn't greener anywhere. Everything is bad, essentially. And you have to just do your duty. And it broke down into like, there was a commentary on the three levels of difficulties you'll go through. It's all going to be difficult. First level is like, you're going to suffer. Just got to keep on going. Second level is you're going to suffer and not be allowed to do your duty. You got to just kind of keep going and do your duty anyway.
Yes.
Third level is your duty is going to incur pain onto others, as in Arjuna's case. You still got to do your duty and kind of essentially endure the own suffering to yourself and the one you're going to inflict onto those you care about, because you still have to carry out your duty good for you to do. You know?
I get it on his example. It's just like tough to translate what that looks like
for us.
Yeah.
That's where I think, I mean, that's kind of what I remember thinking or feeling something similar the previous episodes where I thought it's so hard where you draw the line of what you're meant to do. And that's where I think we can connect it to mentors and people. Like first right. we try to analyze with our own intelligence, what are our own motivations here? Do I think I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing? Then, okay, I have an inner circle. Let me brainstorm this off of them. What would my guru do? What would my people I look up to, mentors, parents, whatever do? Okay, what are weighing out? What are the pros and cons, and then move forwards. It's hard. It's hard when you don't have Krishna there. And it's hard because I do think sometimes the line is blurred. It's not so obvious what you need to do.
Yeah. But I do think that like there is this like intuition that like will call you back to your purpose, right? Like you can't sort of run from your purpose. And I think that is in your nature.
Yeah.
You kind of know what the right thing is if you listen really closely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely.
I remember ages ago, I read this little thing I saw in the lunchroom at my school that it said, the language of God is silence. Mm. So we have to silence everything to connect to what is Krishna saying in our hearts.
Yeah. And I think like that's why it's so important to have moments of quiet during the day, you know, and just have a conversation with Krishna and just like listen to what you get back. I think those moments of meditation are so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And too often nowadays people think silence is just when we're quiet scrolling on our phones, but that's not, not silence.
Silence is allowing yourself to have your own thoughts. Like, you know, those moments where you're just like, not proactively making a to-do list on your mind. Mm-hmm. It's not a moment when you are, you know, it's almost, I think your example of talking to Krishna in the car is a good one because the car, I mean, if you listen to music, then that's a moment where it's not silent. Or if you're listening to a podcast or whatever, which, you know, we encourage because we're the Modern Yogi podcast. But if you have a moment of silence in the car, you start thinking and it can lead to just appreciation for Krishna. It can lead to so many different things. Those moments of silence, right?
That's, I think that's really important. There's like this little Krishna deity that I have in my car. And you know those little cocktail umbrellas that you put into drinks?
Did you put one on Krishna?
Yeah. During the summer months, I put little cocktail umbrellas.
That's adorable.
And like for that Krishna, because it's really sunny in California. And we have a conversation. And like sometimes, maybe it's my ego, but I feel like he tells me what to do sometimes. I feel like if I just sit there quiet enough, parked, you know, maybe sobbing like about my life or something like that. Like I feel like those answers come in those quiet moments.
Yeah,
totally.
You know, there was a psychologist that talked about how in all those transition moments, I'm totally paraphrasing because I heard this ages ago, but in the transition moments is when all of the things we've been mulling over, those swirling thoughts, they kind of start coming together and we make connections. Things make sense. We know the path forward becomes clear. But if in every transition moment you grab your phone, you're not giving yourself the space to do that.
Yes.
You need that space.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't have, I mean, it's so interesting how much we've changed. We used to maybe sit at a doctor's office and sit there and just think, and now that's not there. Or we used to, you know, whatever, you're in an elevator and you're just there with by yourself, with your mind and you, and then you would just think, but those moments are not there anymore.
I think I was telling you about a TikTok that I watched like a little while ago. It was about a neuroscientist and he was literally saying the exact same thing where it's like people can only grow if they experience deep emotion. Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
They can only grow if they experience deep emotion. But nowadays we kind of block the emotional growth because we keep distracting our mind
with
Netflix or scrolling or drugs, intoxications. So we don't allow ourselves to feel those emotions. Mm-hmm. And if we can't feel those emotions, we can't grow. Oof. So we seem stuck.
Absolutely. And you know, along that line, and Priya, what you brought up, the little moment in an elevator, it might seem like the most mundane moment or a moment you're taking a shower or you're sitting on the toilet alone. When you're alone, do you guys have those moments where you don't really feel alone because you can feel there's something there?
Especially on the toilet, yeah.
Okay.
You said it, Priya.
You emphasized it.
No, but you're right. It's like having those moments of just quiet.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to now go into text 60.
Shama Sangi? No, Shamali.
Shamali. All right. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, Krishna says. Mm-hmm. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti.
I don't know what you just said.
So what's Krishna saying here?
What's she saying by the seashore?
That was quick. That was funny.
That's good. All right. One more time, right?
Yeah, read it again.
Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti.
Okay, I think I understand. I remember work is also a key word for karma. So basically he's saying, before this conversation,
right,
your mood was to not want to fight. But instinctively, your nature, based on your previous karma, made you a kshatriya, meaning that you were going to do the same thing anyways.
It's like, yeah, you can't escape your true nature. It will always lead you back to your purpose.
Yeah. So even if you might do it in a different mode, maybe you're not doing it in the mode of goodness and or even surrendering fully unto Krishna, but you're going to end up doing it anyways.
Yeah. Ooh, you know, this reminds me of ages ago, back in college, I studied, there was a philosopher that said something similar, that even if we could go back and technically redo everything, because we have our natures and we are who we are, we would probably do the same thing anyway.
True say. Which gives an interesting perspective on making the right choice, right? Because it's like, your nature is your nature. So almost like the choice you make, whether it's guided by Krishna or by the modes of material nature, it's going to end up being roughly the same. Well, maybe, I don't know. But like, it's going to be chosen based on your nature regardless. Right. So that's an interesting thought process. Right. Like, maybe,
you know,
Krishna's best, but if not, don't worry, because your nature will guide you.
Yeah. I think for like, in the context of Arjuna, Krishna's saying that like Arjuna, you were born with a warrior spirit. It will push you forward whether you like it or not, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have much of a choice here. You're still going to act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your nature will push you forward one way or another. Now, doesn't mean we have to give into our lower natures, right? Like, we still have a decision and we want to filter it with our intelligence, but you're still going to have to act in accordance to your nature.
Yeah. And it says, you know, Prabhupada says in the purport, it's a really short, nice purport, but basically at the end he says, anyone who voluntarily engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious. Meaning that even though you might act a certain way because of your nature, if you do it because you're under the direction of Krishna in your heart, or, you know, through the knowledge, the Bhagavad Gita, or so on and so forth, then you will be victorious, or glorious. You will find the correct path, solution, way. So, you know.
Yeah,
just surrender.
Cool. All right, text number 61, Priyadarshini.
The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wandering of all living entities who are seated on a machine made of the material energy.
Wow, that's an interesting imagery.
Yeah. I'm going to say it one more time just for my own sake. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all entities who are seated on a machine made of the material energy. I feel like I'm not processing that. I break it down and you guys tell me what it means?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. Check.
God is in everyone's heart.
Got it.
Boom.
O Arjuna. Got it. And is directing the wanderings of all living entities.
Gently guiding your journey.
What is wanderings in this case? That just means your journey?
Whatever inclination, whatever pull, direction we go in due to our nature, our desires, we're wandering through material nature.
We go hither and thither.
We go hither and thither and dither.
Yeah. If that wasn't a saying, it should be.
I think I made up that word, but
I have
gently guiding our journey.
Okay, that makes sense. And then which all of us who are seated on a machine made of the material energy.
A machine. Right. So whether we like it or not, we're being carried by the material energy. Like it's a machine that moves forwards almost as if it has a mind of its own.
And not even just whether we like it or not, whether we realize it or not.
Exactly. Yeah. What better said. Yeah. You know, nice. If it doesn't click for some of you, I have a 3-bullet point summary that kind of puts this into different words.
Yes, please.
Do it.
First bullet point. So we know God is our constant companion. He's neither reluctant nor indifferent, but he's diligent and transcendent, always monitoring and mentoring us with care.
That was too many words.
Okay.
So do it one more time.
Less of a summary.
It was just like, because it's like, you have to process them, right? So just one more time.
So God is our constant companion.
Okay.
Who's neither reluctant nor indifferent to us.
Neither reluctant.
Reluctant to help like us. Hang out with us?
Sure, or hang out with us. Or help us.
Good.
Nor is he indifferent to us.
So he's not like indifferent. Okay, let's put it in different words so that it can be absorbed into the brain.
He cares about us. He's not detached or indifferent, right?
reluctant either. So like he's like enthusiastic, mm-hmm, and
but also detached.
What was the second word?
But he's neither reluctant nor indifferent. But
indifferent. He's enthusiastic and interested.
Exactly. Okay. Enthusiastic and interested. And he's diligent and transcendent. So he's on it. He's totally diligent in our lives, but he's also beyond this material realm. He's transcendent.
Right.
And he's always monitoring and mentoring us with care.
Okay. He cares. He's paying attention.
Yeah.
He's on top of it. He's, above it, but still caring.
Yeah.
And so first, he's always our companion.
Totally. First bullet point summary from this text. Second one is his transcendence enables him to free us from material dualities, unlike any other companion in our lives.
Makes sense.
He's the only friend that can get us out of this rat race. There's no other friend that we have.
Exactly.
That is that powerful.
Like everyone else could help you along the way, but he can really take you out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not take you out, like kill you, but like take you out of the rat race.
Out of the material, world. Yeah.
Like pluck you out.
Pluck you out of this suffering.
Yep. Right. And then the final bullet point I think is very interesting and we can dive deeper into, because the final bullet point is, the more we understand God's benevolence and omnipotence, the more we can allow him to guide us to a place of eternal peace.
Mm. Okay, let's break that down.
So I think go ahead. What do you feel?
No. If you have a thought, go for it.
Well, I think we often travel from one place of suffering to another, hoping that each new destination will bring us happiness.
Life after lifetime.
We're disappointed again and again and again. But when we understand Krishna or God's benevolence and competency as our constant companion, then we will feel inspired to take his guidance and mold our life accordingly. When we develop this deep understanding, it'll lead to a trust that leads to a complete surrender. We're going to want to be inspired to look up to Krishna for guidance, And only this can lead us to a place of peace that lasts forever, as we're about to continue reading. Mm. And until we understand this total benevolence and omnipotence of Krishna, we're going to try to either depend on our own selves, on others, on whatever.
That's true. 100%.
So we have to understand that Krishna is compassionate and merciful in a sense, right? To know and trust that, then we can trust him and then we can fully surrender to him.
Exactly. Because unlike anybody else, whether it's we talked about mentors, parents, different guides, maybe spiritual master is different because he's the representative of Krishna, but no one else is fully transcendent in the way that Krishna will be able to help us. Mm-hmm. Of course.
I think we've all felt this too, when we truly let go, the moments of our life where we truly let go and then give the reins of our lives horses to Krishna. Like
our lives horses. I love that.
If we give those reins over to Krishna, there is this moment where like, whoa, Krishna does have me. And I think those come in little moments, but I feel like it's very, very real. Like Krishna is talking about real things that can happen to you when you have faith. And I think we've all experienced these.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we have anything from the purport to dive into a little bit?
Let's see. I mean, the last line is, therefore, one's duty is to surrender. And that is the injunction of the next verse. Mm. So Prabhupada's letting us know that's what's coming next.
All right.
If you understand these messages, that's the next path.
Yeah. And I love the little reminders that Krishna, as the localized super soul, he's in our hearts directing the living being. So that, again, is a answer to, well, gosh, what if Krishna's not seated physically right next to us, guiding us? Well, it's okay. He is. He is in our hearts directing us. Even if we can't remember where we've been, what we've accumulated in our karma, Krishna does and compels us to act in certain ways if we can just listen.
Yeah. All right. Text 62, Shama Sangeeta. Krishna says, oh, is it Scion? Scon? Scon?
Scon.
It's Scon of Bharata.
No, it's Scion.
Oh, Scion of Bharata. Surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Ooh.
Is Krishna talking about himself in third?
Yes. Krishna is talking about himself in third person, and that's kind of hot. Okay. All right. So let me repeat this, okay? Krishna doesn't say surrender to me. Remember, Krishna says surrender to him.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So Krishna says, O Scion of Bharata, Arjuna, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode.
Ooh. I'm trying to look back because why is Krishna talking about himself in the third person?
You know, that's so interesting.
When I read this earlier, I was thinking, right, but then how do we know, how can we let Krishna guide us? How do we know that we're attuning ourselves to that small little whisper within of his guidance? It's very hard. So I was thinking about this, and I think by aligning your conscience with scripture, because our conscience is what's going to guide us morally. It's culturally conditioned. It's so many things. It can mislead us or guide us in the right direction. Like, for example, I remember hearing a nice example of, let's say, someone who's used to eating meat, their whole family eats meat, but then they decide to become a vegetarian or a vegan. They might initially feel bad because, oh, I'm going against my family norms, my cultural traditions. So their conscience is making them feel guilty, even though not eating meat helps so many animals out there. So our conscience is very culturally conditioned, very family instilled. Like, it's not always such a moral compass of objective right and wrong. And that's why I think we need to align our conscience with scripture to know how should we act in such a case? And then how do we apply that to redirect our activities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's helpful.
I love this verse because it's essentially saying, like, let go, like let go. Trust Krishna, and that's where real peace and freedom will come into your life, you know? And then you can end up in the eternal abode, which is with Krishna, right? I think the first step is just let go, trust Krishna. And that's when you'll feel peace in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting here that Krishna's almost repeating this, but really for our benefit, because Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as the supreme. Back in the 10th chapter, Arjuna accepted him as the supreme and also as the supreme abode of everybody, not only because of his own experience, but evidence, as Prabhupada says, by great authorities like Narada, Vyasa, and so on and so on. So he's repeating this again to emphasize, almost like Krishna is so aware that this is going to continue on an eternal conversation for ages to come.
Yeah. And I think it would be really lovely to read the next text real quick, because I think that kind of puts it all into summary.
Okay.
So that would be text 63, Shyamali.
Thus, I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do.
Okay, so I know I say this a lot, but this is one of my favorite verses of the entire Gita. Okay.
And we'll probably just have to break it down in the next episode. No?
I mean, you can say maybe the last thought you had on that.
Literally, Krishna's like, okay, Arjuna, dude, like, I've literally told you everything. This is the realest, most mysterious things that all the knowledge that everyone is searching for. This is the most mysterious stuff. This is the deepest stuff I've ever told you. Everyone's searching for this. Now it's your call. Okay. Yeah. Take some time, think about it. And then you do what feels right to you. That is literally God saying, hey, you have free will.
Exactly.
You take care. You do what you got to do. And I love that. There's no God that's saying, I'm going to smite you to hell, or you're going to do this, or bad things are going to happen if you don't have faith in me, you don't believe in me. Literally, he's like, I've told you everything. Now just do what you want to do.
It's your choice.
Like, I love it.
Like Krishna's saying, this is it's your choice. You have all the information. You get to choose to love me. You get to choose to believe what I'm saying. You get to choose to make the right actions moving forward. So, you know, if you don't want to, you don't have to. Like, no one's forcing you, but just I'm just here for you, you know?
Yeah.
What a beautiful God. He's like, I'm literally not forcing you. It's really beautiful. There's these words that Prabhupada says, Krishna's and it translates to, as you like, you may act. As you like, you may act. So do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else from the purport?
Yes, a lot more.
Yeah.
But I think we'll do it more in the next episode.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, cool. Join us next time for chapter 18, text number 63.
64.
Oh, I see what you did there. Okay. Let's do 64. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you next time.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.